I do, Your Honors. I'm pleased to be here to move the admission of two of Chief Judge Blum's law clerks. Claire Pinkert received her undergraduate degree from Dartmouth College and her law school degree from the University of Chicago and is admitted to practice in the state of Illinois. Amy Tovar received her undergraduate and her law school degrees from Stanford University and is admitted to practice in the state of California. Your Honors, I'm pleased to move their admission.
All right, I'm to read nothing into your slight delay in coming to court, any reluctance to make this motion. I don't suggest it's a contemptuous act, but I just want to make sure that you're committed to this motion.
I am committed to this motion.
Well, I will just say a word on behalf of both these outstanding young lawyers. They have served not only me but the court, therefore, generally in an outstanding fashion. They are representative of the best that we produce from the law schools. They've been a great asset. So I don't know whether that endorsement disqualifies me, but so I'm hoping the other two colleagues will support you. On behalf of Ms. Tovar, she is going to leave the circuit and go to the Ninth Circuit and practice in San Francisco. Although she has often said to me that if she couldn't live in San Francisco, she'd like to live in Milwaukee. I want to mention that to my colleague Judge Evans. Ms. Pinkert is headed also to private practice at this time, and she, in an attempt to influence the vote of my colleague Judge Wood, graduated from the law school.
One of my students.
I understand. In an attempt to impress Judge Evans, she comes from arguably a southern suburb of Milwaukee, Highland Park. I'll leave it at that and hope that I can get a sense of this motion from Judge Wood and Judge Evans. Judge Evans, here comes.
Do I have to vote right now?
Do you want to vote?
Unanimous.
All right. The motion is granted. Welcome to the bar of the court, and we wish you a long and successful tenure. And Ms. Tovar, we hope you find time to practice in the Seventh occasionally. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
A motion having been granted, we will move to the second.
We have to get sworn in.
Oh, that is sworn in. We'll move to the second case in the second. All right, the second case, Mission Land versus Firestone. Mr. Geis.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Merkel, my co-counsel, Mr. Esper, who's sitting at the table there. My name is James Geis, and I represent Mission Land, who was the owner of a warehouse in Munster, Indiana, and General Electric, who was the tenant in that warehouse. They filed a 9-count complaint against 4 different defendants, one of which was Firestone. The counts that applied to Firestone, who's the only appellee here today, was the negligence and strict liability count. The negligence count against Firestone consisted of 9 theories. The court below granted summary judgment on all 9 theories, or on the negligence count, completely. This appeal is about one of the counts, or one of the theories in the count, which is Firestone's negligent inspection of the finished roof for purposes of warranty purposes. To put some context into this, the matter is brought about by the fact that in 1995 there was a storm in Munster, Indiana, and the roof that had been constructed on this warehouse came apart, and there was damage to the roof and to the products that were inside.
But I have to say that, I mean, this, when you, now that you've mentioned the warranty, this case has every appearance of being an attempted warranty case trying to squeeze itself into a tort mold somehow. And there are a lot of problems with that, as the district court's opinion has outlined. You're not at this point, as I understand, attempting to say that you were entitled to claim under the warranty. So I take it that theory is gone. And as I read the district court's opinion, the district court finds, wholly apart from any special doctrines about accepted work of Indiana law, that Firestone is a supplier of a part that went into the ultimate roof, simply didn't owe any duty to either Mission Land or GEC. Mission Land and GEC filed their objections jointly against the magistrate judge's report, and he treats them under GEC's negligence claim jointly. So if there's no duty, and this is really just trying to be a warranty claim, isn't that more than enough to affirm the district court?
Well, I strongly oppose the concept that the trial judge, as to the inspection claim, found no duty. To the contrary, and I pointed this out, I think 7 of the 10 pages in my reply brief are devoted to this, that the trial judge found there was a duty as to the inspection.
Well, I think that overstates the trial judge's opinion. Obviously, we have the trial judge's opinion right in front of us, which is a better source than your reply brief. She is focusing on whether Firestone inspected the brief, and in the negligence discussion, I don't think it's nearly as clear as you're talking about. There's a paragraph under the warranty where he's talking about a duty to repair arising as a matter of law, but that's the warranty paragraph. Then there's, you eventually get around to this inspection idea. He said there's a genuine factual issue on whether Firestone actually did inspect the roof, but nothing about the purpose of the inspection. It's one thing to inspect to see if the rubber has a hole in it. It's another thing to inspect for all purposes. Magistrate Judge Rodovich then concluded that notwithstanding Firestone's inspection, obviously on summary judgment he gives the doubt to you, it owed GEC no duty once the roofing work was accepted.
Justice Wood, if you proceed on, I think where you're
reading. I'm looking at it right
reading,
here.
It doesn't say that. He then explains that the duty becomes extinguished by the accepted work doctrine. And in preparing for the argument and going through the papers today, I came across.
I know you found this old Indiana, March Indiana Supreme Court decision, but I just don't see how we even get there. If Firestone, is it your theory that in Indiana all suppliers of goods owe duties and tort forever down the line to people who incorporated their goods and products?
Firestone in this case is more than a supplier of goods, Justice. They're the warrantor. They sell their product to the contractor.
And but the warranty is a limited warranty. You're saying then anybody in Indiana who writes a limited warranty also at the same time has a full-blown unlimited tort duty to people who suffer property damage?
I'm saying anyone who does an inspection of a contractor's work, and I draw your attention to the Light case that's in my brief. That's the case.
But does it matter whether the inspection is done? I mean, this warranty, which you've appended to your brief, is a limited warranty, and the inspection takes place under the warranty. So would it be your view that all inspections done as part of a warranty completely negate any limitations in the warranty because there's now an open-ended tort duty?
Well, I think it would be independent from the warranty. I think that if someone...
But why, if the inspection is done under the warranty... I mean, somebody who's performed a service, actually Firestone didn't perform any service, but we'll assume, that they do this inspection, and they have all sorts of limitations in the warranty about what they are going to do and what they aren't going to do, but they could have saved their time, right? Because it turns out they're liable for all of your consequential property damage.
Well, let's back up a step and say, I'm the building owner.
And I say, well, I'm going to buy a Firestone rubber guard roof system because Firestone is a good name. That's what Firestone's business is to sell that roof. And I know that Firestone is not going to let this roof be put up unless it meets their standards. And Firestone says, buy our roof because we're going to go up on the roof when this is finished and we're going to make sure it meets our standards. And if you'll notice in the repair documents, that's what they say. They say that it meets Firestone's standards.
Right, but then
you're right there. It would make no difference that the roof was put up in 89. It could have been put up in 69, couldn't it?
Well, I think then you have a question of fact, and we're dealing with a summary judgment here.
This could be a 50-year-old roof that could have blown off. If you're right, you still have a claim.
Well, if it would or it wouldn't present a question of fact. I mean, once this summary judgment ruling, Justice Evans, is based on the accepted work doctrine, which no longer even exists in Indiana, plus it didn't apply to my client, which is the first argument I made, because it did exist when we wrote the briefs.
The accepted work doctrine extinguishes a duty that already exists.
That
doesn't
correct.
Create a duty in
that's
the first
correct.
Place.
Absolutely right. And and that once they did the inspection, there was this duty, and that's what the Light case says. And the only way to get rid of it was to extinguish it. And the judge used the accepted work doctrine. And if I can draw your attention to page 20.
But doesn't it seem sort of odd that you just put a roof on and give a 2-year warranty or a 3-year warranty, but put it on 40 years ago, and under your theory, they'd be liable in negligence?
Well, I would say when you go to the next level of causation under the situation that you're describing, my clients wouldn't be able to prevail under that factual situation.
Yeah, but they'd still have a claim. They could.
They would still have damage.
They would try to get duty. We're talking about a duty. You're saying they have a duty.
I'm saying that they had a duty.
Regardless of when this was.
But maybe the 40 years down the road that the breach is not the cause. I mean, and that would be a question, it would seem to me, that the plaintiffs have a right to go to a trier of fact with, which, you know, we never got past first base here because of the duty problem. And once, whether it be a warrantor or whether it be gratuitous, as was the case in the NIPSCO situation, someone either volunteers or does it for compensation to inspect the contractor's work, they have a duty. And that's what the law is in Indiana. And the last points I want to make, Justice Wood, as far as what this basis of the ruling was, if you look at page 20.
Yeah, that's where he's talking about the strict liability claim, and then he goes back and talks about the accepted work doctrine.
Well, he talks about the fact that the strict liability objection was in the wrong part of the.
Magistrate Judge Rodriguez only applied the accepted work doctrine to GED's negligence claim. But that I still think that, as Judge Evans is saying, you need a tort duty first before you start worrying about that. And there's language in this opinion that also says that GEC, which means GEC and Mission, resists the magistrate judge's conclusion that there was no duty. Arguments were certainly made that as a supplier of goods, Firestone's duty was limited to what it contractually promised to do in the warranty. I'm still concerned that under your theory, as soon as somebody who's issued a warranty goes out and inspects the goods before they say, okay, this is done, our warranty is now in effect, they have opened themselves up to full-blown perpetual tort liability, at least to the point of having a suit filed, surviving a motion for summary judgment, going to a jury. You know perfectly well what that would do for settlement negotiations, what that would do for all sorts of problems.
Well, I think that the warranty is probably a red herring here, because even if they wouldn't have been involved with it, if they would have volunteered, as NIPSCO did in this Light case, to do the inspection.
But it's important that they didn't, because you have to understand what they were undertaking in the inspection. I mean, in many states, there is also a thing called the economic loss doctrine that says if you have an underlying contractual relationship between parties, you don't, unless there's a sudden and unexpected, et cetera, event, move over to tort liability.
Which we don't have here, the contractual. We're not appealing that. That was one of the arguments, and you know, it was summary judgment against us on that, and I'm not here on that.
Right.
But I am
but
here.
But we are here trying to figure out whether this company, Firestone, owed any tort duty to your client by virtue of the fact that, resolving the facts favorably to you, it inspected the roof back in 1989 when it was finished. Because they
supplied
the rubber, yeah.
Right, and the rest of it falls pretty neatly.
Right.
I don't think we even need to get into that. But it certainly seems to me in reading this order that the finding was, I mean, the transition in the order, which goes from the no-duty findings on all the other allegations to the inspection, and then saying, well, there's a matter, a question of fact as to whether they're inspection. Well, that was an understatement, because Firestone had conceded in the discovery that they had inspected it. So you have the inspection, and then the judge says, notwithstanding the inspection, the accepted work doctrine knocks it out. And all the Firestone references about no duty come from the other allegations of negligence, which we're not appealing because they're right. But they're wrong on this, and I see I'm into my rebuttal time. And
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Guy. Mr. Merkel?
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Mark Merkel. I represent Bristol Firestone, the Riverside LLC, which is Firestone Building Products Division, which is the manufacturer of the products that were involved in this case. As the court has acknowledged, the accepted work doctrine has been abrogated in Indiana after we had filed our briefs, and that has been brought to the court's attention. It's been our position that regardless of the abrogation of the accepted work doctrine in Indiana, there is no duty in this case. There has been no evidence that the plaintiffs have brought forward at the trial level that there was a duty either under the contract, which would arise, giving rise to a tort claim under contract, or a straight negligence claim.
But the key page of the district court's opinion is page 10, actually, because at that point, still in the discussion of the negligence claim, the court begins to talk about this inspection theory. I think, plain, that's the only theory in this case. And says that there's a factual issue whether Firestone inspected the roof once it was fully installed and thereby assumed a duty to conduct the inspection with due skill and care. Then there's this sentence. Magistrate Judge Radovich then concluded that notwithstanding Firestone's inspection, it owed GEC no duty once the roofing work was accepted. Well, the use of that word accepted and then going on to the citations of accepted work doctrine cases certainly most readily would mean that the reason the magistrate judge thought there was no duty is because the work was accepted, not because of something inherent in the relationship between Firestone and the other parties. And so where are we if this duty has now been abrogated by Indiana?
Well, if the court, we believe that the opinion says that there is no duty. There's been no finding by the plaintiff of any duty.
Well, but it says, I mean, but you have to, suppose we thought, though, that the use of this word accepted that I've just highlighted on page 10 means that the reason the court found there was no duty is because the work was accepted. In other words, there was some hypothetical duty, but once it's accepted, the duty's erased. Where does that leave you under the new Indiana decision?
The Indiana decision would tell us now that we would have to go back to the general negligence principles.
Okay.
And find out, and the Indiana courts in Light versus NIPSCO and Oliver versus Van Natta said that we go back to restatement of second and torts, 324A, and we go through that analysis. And I believe there's enough evidence in the record to support that there was never a duty that was created under the restatement second of torts under 324A. Because there are one of three elements must be found. There must be either a reliance on the inspection. There must be a proof that the inspection, the failure to complete the inspection in a reasonable manner, increased the harm, or that Firestone, by doing the inspection, assumed a duty or an obligation that the third party, NIR or the roofer or GE was expecting. And none of those three elements exist in this case, and the record is complete on that.
Well, isn't there a question of fact on the first of them, reliance?
There is no, I don't believe there's a question of fact because there is, in the, one of the court's statements was that there was never a relationship between Firestone and GE and Mission Land. So the court finding that there's no relationship between GE and Mission Land and Firestone, there can never have been a reliance element. In fact, the evidence that the lower court, I think, would establish that GE and Mission Land never knew that this inspection had taken place. It was a something that occurred in 89, and it was done without any knowledge, so there could be no reliance by GE or Mission Land on that. Also, we know that there'd be no duty. It wasn't a replacement of an obligation. We find by looking at the appendices, exhibits E and F, that in essence, Firestone conducted this inspection, and it is signed by, at the bottom, by the applicator, which was NIR. And it's NIR who is affirming to Firestone at, that the repairs have been completed, that as part of the inspection, and that having completed those repairs, that the building, that the roof had been installed according to Firestone specifications. So it is clear from the document that Firestone was relying upon NIR to affirm that it had been completed the specs, including the ballast, which is the issue, and the wood nailer, both of which are products that were not part of Firestone's roofing system. Those were installed by NIR, the roofer, of which Firestone had no obligation to inspect, and in fact would not even be subject to the Firestone warranty. As the court acknowledged, the warranty is a limited warranty to repair leaks in the system, leaks in the rubber, and Firestone only sold here the rubber membrane and the adhesives. The roofing system, as Magistrate Radovich in his 57-page opinion illustrated, completes, is made up of decking, guttering, all other sorts of materials of which Firestone would have no responsibility for and of which Firestone would not have inspected. And the analysis here is that we should have gone beyond the products that related to our warranty and then, in essence, warranted the whole roofing system. And that was completely one of the arguments that was made at the lower court, which Judge Radovich and Judge Moody went through and took apart piece by piece, finding there's no strict liability and no negligence under any of the nine allegations that were set forth in the complaint.
How, if at all, do you think the scope of the warranty relates to any tort duty that might exist under 324A or elsewhere?
Well, we know, first of all, that Judge Moody found that in his statement, in his opinion, that the tort, the warranty itself, provides no basis for tort. And that's at page 9.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that, so, and I don't take your opponents to be arguing that.
So we now have to say, does the warranty provide any basis or duty under the restatement of torts? And we would argue that no, it doesn't, because there's the three elements that must be found, one of the three, no reliance. There's no, the inspection doesn't, didn't replace the obligations of NIR or the architect. They were the ones who would eventually deliver the roof to the building owner. There would have been, there were at the lower court numerous documents that established that the architect was involved in certificates of completion. NIR would have received certificates of completion. There would have been signing off of various stages of the work in order to receive payment. So there was never a replacement of the inspection that GE or Mission Land could have relied upon for purposes of the restatement of torts, and therefore the warranty doesn't apply there. And we also know that it doesn't increase, the warranty didn't increase the harm, which would want to be the only other element that would be left on the restatement, because it has nothing to do with the alleged deficiencies in this roof system, which were the wood nailer and the ballast. So it wouldn't have increased any liability under the restatement. We believe that the court, the lower court, has properly found that it has completely analyzed all of the claims that would come underneath the negligence count for an improper inspection. It was clear that the lower court had analyzed it, and apart from the acceptance doctrine, that the acceptance doctrine was added on by Judge Radovich because he had applied it to the other defendants. And his footnote says that since I've applied it and it was effective as to NIR and Friedman Dobrin, we're going to also apply it to Firestone. So that never had to be dealt with by Judge Radovich. It was added in after the fact. I believe he did find that the plaintiffs had never come forward with enough evidence to establish any duty owed by Firestone on any of the negligence theories, which would be sufficient to grant summary judgment for Firestone in this case, that the abrogation of the acceptance doctrine itself doesn't affect the decision because of those previous findings. But even if we did apply, if we did say the acceptance doctrine did apply and was the sole basis, we then are stepped back into the restatement of tort second. And if we do that analysis, we can establish that there was not any of the elements necessary under the restatement to find that Firestone had a gratuitous duty of which there was a standard, a reasonable standard of care.
That's the theory, that Firestone gratuitously, more or less, undertook not just limited inspection, but the full-blown, we're the last people to sign off on this roof kind of inspection that would lead one to think that they had a sound roof.
Factually, that just did not occur. There was no reliance by anybody on that as to that element, so it just never occurred. I would lastly, in closing, just note that even if we get to the issue that you met the restatement and there was some duty that was to be found, we would say that the record is complete enough to establish that Firestone met that duty by the warnings that were given to the architect and to the roofer through their specifications, the design specifications. In the arguments that all relate to the failure to warn in the strict products case, the extent that you can rely upon those as findings of fact and conclusions of the law as to the reasonableness of Firestone's conduct at the inspection level, we have the court saying that we have discharged our duties by giving sufficient and adequate warnings to the architect to use, and the roofer to use reasonable amounts of ballast and to make sure that the wood nailer was of appropriate strength. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merkel. Ms. Guy.
Take the easiest point first, Justice Evans. As my co-counsel pointed out, that the 40-year problem or the perpetuity problem would be dealt with by the statute of limitations, if nothing else. So it can't go past the statute.
The
damage, if it was a tort claim, the statute of limitations wouldn't start to run until the damage occurred.
So that's true.
Isn't that where you start to measure statute of limitations?
Although the causation would certainly diminish over the years. I want to address the reliance point. A lot of reliance on Firestone here. This is how they sell their products. They have licensed installers, and they go to the public and say, use our licensed installers. We make a good product, and we put our name behind it, and that's why you should use Firestone instead of Goodyear or whatever the alternatives are, and we'll make sure it's done right. And the warranty, the inspection wasn't just to find holes in the membrane, which wouldn't have been realistic anyway because it had ballast over it when it was finished. It was for proper workmanship to say we want to make sure that our licensed installers do this right and we're putting our name behind it and that's why you should buy Firestone. So this is not such a gratuitous inspection, and it's not just for the warranty. It's how they sell their product. It's one of their marketing tools. And also should realize, as far as the warranty, which I take the position is kind of a red herring in this case because the reliance is based on Firestone's name, and we'll come in and make sure it's good, just as NIPSCO is going to come in and make sure before they turned on the gas, that my clients paid for this warranty. This was not some gratuitous thing. And if you look at the warranty, or at least this repair thing, you'll see they certify that on a Firestone form. The fact that they let their applicator sign the Firestone storm, I don't think that that absolves them, that this meets our standards. And this is a good roof you got. It wasn't a good roof we got. We'd like to go to the trier of fact.
Thank you, Mr. Guy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Merkel. The case is taken under advisement.